Hello and welcome to another virtual author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore. Today, the Poison Pen is lucky to have with us a trio of talented writers, including Leanne Sparks, Alex Kenna, and Gwen Florio. Before we begin today, I would like to let those listening in know the Poison Pen does have copies of all three of our authors' books, and we would be happy to hold one for you or put it in the mail. Just give us a call or go online to the Poison Pen Bookstore. And now I'd like to welcome Leanne, Alex, and Gwen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for visiting today. I'm going to start you off, ladies, with a question about who you were before you became a published writer, or in other words, what is your backstory? And why don't we start with you, Leanne?
I have a background in law. I went to law school and then I did some time doing everything from family law to estates, and then I got into criminal defense. Yeah. And I was married to the Navy. My husband was in the Navy. And so we moved around a lot, and all the states that we moved to didn't have reciprocity. So I stopped taking the bar exam and decided to go back to my first love of writing.
Wow. What about you, Alex?
I'm also a lawyer. I'm a prosecutor. And then before I went to law school, I went to art school and studied art history, and I did art reviews, and I briefly worked in a gallery. So that was my pre-law school background.
That's interesting. And Gwen, I know you have a fascinating background.
Well, I was a journalist for many, many years. Alas, I am not a lawyer, given that I write about a public defender. So, Leanne, I'm very envious of your background. But I covered what we call cops and courts in journalism for years. And so that's where my fascination with this came from.
Now we'll switch gears and talk about the new book or newish book that brought you to us today. And why don't we start with you, Gwen? What can you tell us about it?
So my book is called The Least Among Us. Ta-da. And it is about a public defender who one of her favorite clients, and he's her favorite because he's kind of one of those lovable ne'er-do-wells who's always showing up in court on stupid things, including the most recent, he streaked the St. Patrick's Day parade. So this is a timely panel for that. But suddenly, he finds himself suspected of murder and then later formally charged. And she is convinced he didn't do it. Nothing in his background suggests that. But he's a transient. He's a pretty convenient defendant. And so she has to go about herself finding the evidence to prove that he didn't do it.
Wow. It's fascinating. Alex, your first book is your debut, is that correct?
Yes, it's my debut. It's called What Meets the Eye. My book is focuses on a private investigator, and she gets a case where a famous painter was recently found dead in her apartment, and it's suspected to be suicide, but her father thinks it's otherwise. It goes into a lot of different themes in the art world. There's an art forgery angle. And a contemporary art fair angle. So that's my book.
What about you, Leanne?
So my book is Every Missing Girl, and it is the second in the Kendall Beck thriller series. The first one is The Wrong Woman, pointing the wrong way. Every Missing Girl picks up where Wrong Woman left off, and it centers around an FBI agent, Kendall Beck, who has an unofficial sidekick in the Denver homicide division named Adam. And Adam's niece goes missing during a big investigation into a double homicide where a young girl is found that has been missing for months. So it's kind of one of those things where Kendall works with missing children in the FBI. And so she kind of takes over this investigation, but she's walking a thin line because it is so personal to Adam, and she's trying to be professional, but she does know this little girl. So, and they're not really sure if she's run away, if she's been kidnapped, or what has happened to her. So it goes down a lot of different avenues.
All of your books are being marketed as procedurals within the mystery crime fiction genre. For someone who's not familiar with that term or that idea of a mystery, how would you explain a procedural to them? And we'll start with you, Leanne.
I think it centers around how police investigate, or any type of law enforcement investigates, and it's heavy on their procedural and how, you know, they go about investigating certain crimes. And so it very much is, we try to stay as close to how those things would happen in real life without being tedious and boring. So it's really kind of a highlight of how law enforcement goes around investigations.
Gwen, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I think the details are really important. Mine focuses a little bit more on action within the courtroom or surrounding the courtroom. But again, I want to be sure I get things right. You know, one of the complaints you hear sometimes about crime novels is people go, or on TV shows, you hear it even more, busting into houses without getting a warrant. So again, those are things I want to get right. I want to get the fact that you've got to be charged within a certain amount of time, those sorts of things. So I spend a lot of time looking in the Montana Code annotated. I was living in Montana when I wrote this. And again, wanted to be sure. In Montana, the charge is homicide, not murder. Just little things like that. So that's what I kind of look for with procedurals. Again, you don't want the details to bog it down, but boy, you sure want them to be right. That's true.
Would you add anything, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I would. My book is not a classic procedural. It's kind of procedural adjacent. My investigator is a former cop and a public defender, and I had originally started writing her as a cop, but I got a little bit intimidated by that same idea of making sure that everything is perfect without, and I could kind of envision, would a police officer read this and think, no, that's not how we get a warrant. So I kind of gave myself a little bit of leeway, but I guess I would probably think of it as maybe a little bit closer to life than sort of something on the cozy end of the spectrum, where it's more entertainment, and you have, maybe you have your charming older woman character who's an amateur sleuth and solving murders, and they're super entertaining. But I think procedurals try to be a little bit closer to crime investigation as it would actually unfold in the real world.
That's good. That's interesting. You've all kind of mentioned when writing procedures and research is important. Can you talk a little bit about the role of research in your writing process, what sources you may have used, and maybe what surprised you when you were writing your recent book, when you were researching it, that you came across? And I'll just open it up to whoever wants to start.
And we're all
starting. I'll pick someone.
So I was lucky enough when I first started writing this series, I had a friend who was retired FBI and had retired when the Crimes Against Children Unit was just being started. And back then it was not called that. It's gone through a few iterations. Just recently they've all, well, not recently, but they added in the cyber portion of it. So I was really, I was able to actually talk to and go and visit the FBI. And get questions answered, see how they do it, see what it looks like there. And I also have friends that are in law enforcement in Colorado, so that helps me a lot. So a lot of it is Google research to begin with, and then when I get down to, I really need to know something about this that I can't find on the internet, and I will send questions off to my my buddies in the various law enforcement divisions.
I think my background as a journalist really comes in handy here, because I'm used to researching issues either prior to doing interviews or as I'm writing my stories. So that comes very naturally. I'm also used to just calling up people cold and saying, hey, I'm working on this and I would like to get it right. Can you help me? The other thing that really helped when I started writing crime novels, I was still working as a journalist and I had to drop by the police station every day to talk to the public relations guy to find out what was happening. And I could ask him questions. And after a while he started saying, okay, is this a job question or a book question? But again, I had sources right there in front of me. And I also have friends who are attorneys and public defenders, and they've been very helpful.
Yeah, I think for this book, I did more research on the art side of things. I read a lot of books about the contemporary art world. I did a lot of just driving around LA and going to the fancier galleries and getting a sense of what they looked like, you know, watching the people who went in and kind of observing them. And then I think some of it, I didn't have to do research because I had I studied art in college and I'd worked in a gallery. And so some of it was just kind of, you know, taking a little bit from my own background. And I think I probably do less research on the law enforcement side because kind of my standard is like, would an intelligent layperson think this is believable? And I like my professional background, I think, is close enough to law enforcement that I can usually get a pretty good sense of that. But sometimes if there's a specific legal question where I feel like, oh, well, I really don't know, then I might kind of look into that. But for this one, it was a lot more about digging into the art world, which was kind of a fun detour.
Yeah, who knew the art world had such dark corners?
Yeah, I think, well, I think where any avenue of has dark corners, it just depends where you look. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about your process as a writer, because I know that can vary from person to person. I would think, though, just as a reader, that if you're writing a mystery, any type of mystery, you need to have some kind of structure in mind before you begin, like who did it, how it was done. You can't really kind of hope it all comes together at the end. But I've been surprised because there are some writers who do take that approach. So let's talk about each of your processes, and we'll start with you, Leanne.
Chaotic. that's the best way to explain it. I'm an uber plotter, so I spend a good deal of my time plotting everything out. I see it. I know the story pretty well by the time I sit down and write it. But that doesn't mean that it always goes the way I've outlined it. Every missing girl is a big. it was a huge kind of detour from my original outline. There were a lot of characters that came in. Some different subplots that came in, and there was this massive twist at the end that I did not see coming. And it was actually so big that my editor and I were like, can we actually do this? And so there was some discussion about whether or not we were going to keep it. And I'm glad we did. It's been a big draw. But I think most of the time, yeah, you do have to kind of know, I need to be able to visualize where I'm going in the story and what key pieces of evidence I need to come in at certain times. So even when I'm writing and I get that detour, I do tend to go back and update my outline to make sure that I've hit everything and I've got all of the pieces of evidence coming in at a time that it's that it makes sense. So the story kind of flows better, and it's not just this massive data dump at the end of the book where everything kind of comes together. I think it's more fun for readers if they can follow along and try and figure it out as they go. And I used to be very much, I didn't want people to figure it out. And I've come to realize that a lot of times readers want to be able to figure it out along the way to see if they're right. But they do still like those twists along the way that make them question whether they're correct. So
that's fascinating. Alex, what is your process like? Is it anything like your artistic painting skills?
In some ways it is. It's I think I learned, I didn't study writing officially, but I think in some ways going to art school was very helpful because I learned how to kind of construct an image where instead of just sort of focusing on one little detail at a time, you sort of have to build it up in layers. And I'm naturally extremely disorganized and chaotic, but I sort of forced myself to think about writing that way. So I'm definitely a pantser, but I kind of compensate for that by, after I've written a certain amount, I'll go back and reread it from the beginning. And so I can make sure that everything's hanging together and that, you know, if I've just sort of stream of conscious my way through 50 pages, I then go back from the beginning and make sure that there isn't something in chapter two that conflicts with something in chapter four, and everything eventually kind of gets tied together. But a lot of going back and forth and a lot of editing for sure.
Gwen, what about you? Does your journalistic background make you want to write a different way?
A little. When I first started writing fiction, I was really freaked out by the fact that I didn't know what happened. you know, as a reporter, you do all your reporting and you have your notes and you know what your story is. And I would look at this blank page and go, oh no, what? And I started thinking of my novels as very long newspaper stories where you have to have an immediate hook that gets somebody in. You've got to make sure the middle has some interesting stuff to keep them going. And you've got to just stick the landing at the end. And that, oddly enough, was helpful. I'm glad to hear about your processes, though, because chaotic would describe mine. I always know my beginning and my end. You know, it's I always say there's those 300 pages in the middle. what I do, I tend to kind of outline as I go. You know, I'll start with a few chapters outline and I'll write those and I think, okay, what logically happens next? And then I'll outline a few more and follow that. Likewise, if I write something in chapter 10 that's going to change something that happened in chapter 3, I make a little note. So I end up with my first draft and a long list of notes that I have to go back and address through the book. But at least I've got the first draft done. I mean, my first drafts are just dreadful, but they're there. And then I can go back and make them better, which is a great feeling.
Let's shift a little bit and talk about your book's setting, because setting can make or break a story. I know in some cases, writers like to use a real setting like Los Angeles. In other cases, they may opt to put a fictional twist on a real place. What can you tell us about your setting and why you specifically chose it for your book? And we'll start with you, Gwen.
I realized I never named the state in my book. And I kind of did that specifically, I think, when I did the previous book. This one is the second. I envisioned it being in Idaho when I started, and then somewhere in the middle, I shifted to Montana. So I just took out any state references. But it is clearly in a cold Western state. And that really played into this book because I set it in the dead of a Montana winter. Mm-hmm. And this past winter was dreadful. But these are, it's a lot about homeless people, and it's a lot about how they survive on the streets. And how they deal with that. And my character, as she's going out and talking to them and trying to gain their trust, you know, she's thinking, oh, I've got on my down jacket and my nice boots and my hat and my gloves. And these people don't have those things. And, you know, she gains a great deal of empathy as a result. So the setting and the season was really key to my book.
What about you, Leanne?
Well, my books are set in Colorado, and I am originally from Colorado. So I've left a long time ago, but this kind of helps me to keep in touch with Colorado because I do go back and do research, and then I go back and try and do book signings and things. But I wanted it, I'm originally from Colorado Springs. I set it in Denver because most of my FBI character, Kendall, is in the Crimes Against Children unit, which deals with child trafficking and things like that. And Denver is a really good city for that because there's two major interstates that go through there. And that's a very common way of transporting young people, whether it be boys or girls, is through the interstate system. So I figured that would be a really good place to put this. And I would still be able to have, you know, my home state involved.
Alex, tell us about your setting.
Yeah, I mean, my book is, it's set in LA, and really for this story, just because there's a lot of art stars and art and a lot of money going on, it kind of had to be LA or New York for it to be realistic. And I live here, so that was just the place that made sense to set it. But I think the nice thing about LA is it's, you know, as a setting, it's kind of like Costco. There's a little bit of everything. Like, you know, if you want something weird to happen, it's probably happening in LA. So it does as a writer, it kind of lets you pick and choose in things without kind of going too far out of the expected.
Yeah, actually, I always think of Los Angeles as a bunch of small communities or something like that. You've got so many different geographical kind of vibes.
Yeah, I mean, I heard someone recently describe it as not really having a center, which, or an identity, and I think that's really true. You can kind of find a mini community with an identity that fits the vibe that you're going for. So it's kind of useful as a tool for that, from that reason.
Each of you have now published a book. For some of you, it's one of many. For Alex, it's your first. If you could go back in time to when you were first starting out as a writer, what advice would you give yourself? And we'll start with you, Leah.
I think patience, and just sit down and write it, and don't worry about, you know, how you're going to get an agent and how you're going to get it published and things like that. I think that the first thing you need to do is learn the craft and be patient and learn how to figure out how to write, figure out your writing style, and figure out what you want to write. Because even within mysteries and thrillers, there's so many different subgenres that you can get into, like cozy or straight mysteries. And so I think it especially in this age of self-publishing, I think that sometimes there's a rush to get things out. And if things aren't happening fast enough, then I'll just go and do the self-publishing route, which either route, traditionally published or self-publishing, is a difficult route to go. So I think I would tell myself, just don't worry about things so much. Calm down, write your book, make it the best you can make it. And then things will just fall into place after that.
Lynn, what about you?
I would heartily second that. I think, like a lot of young writers, when I first started, I was like, how do I get an agent? How do I get published? And the first book I sent out very deservedly got rejected everywhere. And when I went back and looked at it a few years later, like, oh my God, half the book was backstory. You know, I really had to learn the craft. And then the second thing I would say, and it's kind of the opposite end of that spectrum, is have the next book in mind. You know, when you are sending your book out, be ready when someone says, and what comes after this, to know. You know, either maybe if things are taking a while, you've already got a rough draft, you've already, you know, have a completed manuscript, but you know what comes next. And publishers like that very much.
Alex?
Well, I think I want to borrow something from what Gwen said about process, which is like get it on paper. Because I think when we're first starting out, I know certainly for me, there's a tendency to polish the first, you know, 2.5 chapters over and over and over again. And, you know, it's been 6 months and you have this very overwritten, precious 10 pages. But I think, the process of learning how to write a novel, you have to get the novel done, and then you can always go back and work on it. And I think the other thing I would just say is understand the market and be strategic. Figure out where you fall into the market. Figure out, you know, if you're going to be selling this particular type of story, what other books are similar in terms of, you know, what types of readers are going to be drawn to your book? You know, what types of stories are getting attention? And, you know, think about that, because you're not publishing in a vacuum.
That's true. I think publishers, especially nowadays, always want those, I guess they call them comps or comparables when you're publishing a book, and who you're like and who your readership would be. So that's smart.
Yeah. They definitely ask. They want to know if somebody picked up this book, if they like a certain writer, are they going to like your book? Is it similar to that? So definitely, I think that's an important part.
Who would you suggest your books to if they've read other writers? Who are your comps, I guess? We'll start with you, Leanne.
So probably along the lines, I write really dark stuff, but with a little bit of I'll say humorous. It's a little bit of dark humor. And I think that probably more lends itself to like the fans of Karen Slaughter, maybe Lisa Gardner. I'm a huge Harlan Coben fan, so I would love to be compared to his books. But yeah, along those lines, along the lines of you know, dark mysteries and thrillers, but with characters that you want to go out to lunch with. So that's pretty much who I think I tend to write for.
Gwen, who would your readership be?
You know, I'm a big fan of Laura Lippman. I like her stories. They're very place-based. I think I might, you know, hopefully someday slot myself in that category. I would never compare myself to Jo Nesbø, but I just finished one of his books. And one of the things I realized I like so much about his books is that there's humor in them. And a lot of the writers I like, because I read pretty dark books, and my own books likewise are pretty dark, but you need that humor. And I will deliberately think as I'm writing, okay, how can I drop something in here that's not slapstick, but just lightens it a little bit. So I always go blank when I'm asked this question. You'd think I'd have a list written out, but those are a couple of people and some characteristics I like in books.
Alex?
Yeah, I would say definitely for fans of work that's also pretty dark and very character driven. I think my books might have multiple perspectives and multiple viewpoints, and they travel into different points in time. And I'm learning that readers either like that or they don't like it. So that's, you know, it's funny because you see reviews and people are either like, oh, you know, this gives you a new perspective on things, or this is terrible, stick to one narrator. But I think that, you know, that's definitely a large part of my book. So that's a factor.
Let's talk a little bit about you as readers, because you're not just writers, but you also have a history of reading. What can you tell us about some of the books that have been important to you as a reader? You write procedural mysteries. Are there certain procedural mysteries that you feel are kind of key to you as a writer, not just a reader? And I'll throw it open to whoever wants to start. Or I'll pick one of you.
I will say I started off reading almost exclusively literary fiction. I came to crime fiction late, and it's been really interesting to watch my own shift now, in that now when I read literary fiction, it could be beautifully written, but if it's moving slowly, I'm like, come on, you know, let's have a plot here. And I pick out people like Alice Munro, who's very literary, but has written some of the most chilling stories I've ever read. So I like people like her, you know, Cormac McCarthy, super dark, but beautifully written. James Lee Burke, again, beyond dark, but the writing is so beautiful that I just, you know, I find myself copying down sentences and then kind of slinking away, wondering why I even try to write. So I like that combination of a good pace and beautiful writing and character driven, as you said.
Wasn't your first book, Gwen Montana, award winning?
It was, which was quite delightful. I was just so thrilled to get published. You know, I think like many young writers, it's like, please just let me publish one book and I'll never ask for anything again in my life. And then when it won awards, I was just bowled over. So that was really gratifying. And especially, I'm sure like a lot of people, it took me years and years to get published. And it's like, okay, I've learned something over the years. I'm doing something right here. And it was encouraging as I continued to write and publish.
Congrats. Yeah. Awesome.
Deanna or Alex, what about you as readers?
As readers, Tana French is the person who I kind of binged on when I was trying to teach myself how to write mysteries, because she's such an incredible craftsman. And she has a dialogue scene, it's not just like Johnny said, Katie said, you know, Elsie said, it's, you know, she's almost stage crafting everything. So I went through her books almost more like a student than a reader. And a little bit of Dawn Winslow, I was reading her, Tana French, for her characters and her, you know, her lyricism and Dawn Winslow, just because he's such an incredible plotter. And, you know, nobody can plot a book like him. So, those were a couple of the ones who really influenced me. And then Elena Ferrante, she's obviously not a crime writer, but just in terms of developing a character who you just kind of hang on to because they're so real, you can almost, you know, hear them yelling at you in Italian. So she's been a big influence recently.
For me, I guess I don't really read so much crime procedurals. I like all sorts of crime. I do love true crime. So Greg Hurwitz is awesome. Greg Olson wrote some really, that's what I meant. Greg Olson has written some really scary stuff in the true crime genre. But I do like Danielle Gerard. Lorethan White, who writes psychological thrillers, is amongst my favorites right now. As I said, Harlan Coben can do no wrong. And I do like Karen Slaughter. And so mm-hmm. along those lines, I mean, Karen Slaughter could be considered police procedural too. So that's probably the closest. But I also like other authors outside of the genre. I've been trying to read a lot more things that I would not normally read, like YA and things like that, just to get kind of a different perspective.
That's great. If you want, what do you, would you like to tell us about what's next for you as an author? And if you choose to keep that secret, that's fine too. I'll throw it open to everyone's discussion.
I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea what's going on.
I am at the minute, and hopefully this won't go on too long, but contract free. And so I've taken the opportunity just to start something, a standalone, that's really different from things I've written before, with one exception. And it's kind of a multi-generational family tale. And it starts in the 1930s. And that's as far as I want to go. It's really challenging me. I have friends who write historical fiction. And I've always said I'd never do it for fear of getting a detail wrong. And here I am looking up what people wore in the 1930s. Luckily, there's a lot out there. Thank you, Internet. I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's sort of that sense of freedom that you got with your first book when you didn't know whether it would get published or not. So I'm enjoying it.
I'm currently polishing up a sequel. So that's been fun. It's the same main character, but I wrote it so that it could function as a standalone, and it's in a different place. It's in a small town in the mountains. So that was fun because it gave me a chance to write about a totally different setting and give it a totally different vibe.
That's great. Leanne, I have a question specifically for you because your book is set in Colorado. Mm-hmm. I had no idea Colorado was a magnet for serial killers.
I know. I did some research on it, and I was very surprised. There's some really well-known serial killers that have gone through there. Ted Bundy, of course, being one of the maybe more well-known, who escaped from jail. And, well, escaped twice from jail. One time he was actually at the courthouse, jumped out of the courthouse, and was found about 6 days later, put back in jail, and then he managed to break out of that jail. And that's when he went to Florida and was eventually caught, but, you know, didn't end up killing more people. Probably the most notorious / disgusting serial killers was Chris Watts, most recently, who killed his wife and unborn child and two children. It was very interesting to go and just kind of dig into the history of Colorado and its serial killers a little bit. I think it's everywhere, but you know, I'm from Colorado. So I grew up thinking that this is just a pristine place and nothing bad happens here. So it's kind of interesting to go and see what the dark side is a little bit.
Yeah, the whole contrast against the healthy, outdoorsy kind of state and this dark obsession.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I lived in Colorado for several years, and that's one of the things I enjoyed about your books. And I had the same impression when I moved there. It's like, oh, it's so pretty, the mountains, the clean air, the blue sky. But you're right, those two interstate highways that converge there bring a ton of crime into Denver. So it was a great setting, and I enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Gwen, is it true that you actually grew up on a wildlife refuge?
Did grow up on a wildlife refuge, which was quite a wonderful way to grow up. You know, several thousand acres, a lot of geese and ducks and marsh and a lot of time alone. My parents would not let us have a TV until I was in high school, I think. So we read like crazy. And, you know, it was a good background for a kid to just sort of sit and imagine things.
And Alex, is it also true that you have no sense of direction whatsoever?
None. I mean, there's some kind of technical diagnosis, but I use my GPS to go to work, and I've been working at the same place for a year. But my husband is continually amazed, and I'm at the point where my two-year-old has a better sense of direction, and will turn a certain way, and he'll be like, "Grocery store there, mommy." I'm like, "Oh, now I know."
I really empathize with that because, again, we just moved here. We've been here a month now. The grocery store is 2 miles away, and I'm still using my GPS.
There you go. Yeah. Oh. People don't understand
that. We're not alone.
You either have it or you don't.
Yeah.
It's been fascinating hearing more about your books. Before we run out of time, can you let us know how readers can learn more about you and your books, what social media platforms you're on? And we'll start with you, Leanne.
I'm everywhere. I am on Facebook. I have a Facebook author page. I also have a reader group called Leanne Kale Sparks Reader Cafe. So you can go there and join up. I am on Instagram and TikTok. And I have a website, leannekalesparks.com, where you can find all the information about my social media. You can sign up for my newsletter there, and you can learn more about my books, and you can even buy my books from there. There's links for everywhere it's sold. You can find a link for it there.
Alex?
I'm on Twitter. It's AlexKennan9. I'm also on Facebook, and I have a terrible website that I made, which is a work in progress, but it does exist. Just alexkenna.com. So that's where I'm at.
And Gwen?
I have a website, gwenflorio.net. I have a newsletter that is also on the website. So if you want to sign up for that, you can go to the spot on the website and link to it. That comes out once a month. I'm on Twitter, Facebook. I still have a Facebook author page, but I'm using that less and less and more focusing on the newsletter. Instagram. Every so often I drop in on TikTok. I think that's it. And everything is just Gwen Florio, is how you find me. All one word.
For those of you that are involved in TikTok, what is it about it that drives readers there?
I think it's the book talkers, and as well as on Instagram, it's the bookstagrammers. I think that they are, you don't have to, we used to have the blogs, where they would do the reviews and things. And now, you know, you go to TikTok and you just get little snippets and you get people that have read it or either, you know, like it or don't like it. But yeah, so I think that the younger generation is very video driven. So they want to see it, not just the regular posts. They don't want to go and read an entire blog page about it. So it's quick little snippets. So I think that's what drives people there.
That's fascinating. Before we conclude, can each of you tell us once again about your latest book, a little bit about it, the title, the author, everything that you can. And we'll start with you, Leanne.
It is Every Missing Girl. It is book two in the Kindle Beck thriller series. It deals with kidnapping. It deals with murder, and it deals with a young girl that goes astray, and they're not sure if she has run away or something else has happened to her. So the hunt is on to try and find her. There's an FBI agent working with a homicide detective whose niece it is that went missing. So it's a little bit of a trying to work professionally and personally and make those two worlds kind of to work together.
Alex, what meets the eye? Tell us about that.
Yes, What Meets the Eye. It's my first book. It's about a down and out private detective who looks into the death of a famous artist and ends up going down the rabbit hole and exploring art forgery, organized crime, and various other criminal misadventures.
And Gwen?
Mine is The Least Among Us. It's the second, featuring public defender Julia Geary. And in this case, it involves murders of homeless people, and it really investigates the lives of people on the margins. It's in hardcover, ebook, audiobook, wherever books are sold.
Including the Poison Pen.
Including.
I'd like to thank Leanne, Alex, and Gwen for taking time to visit the Poison Pen virtually, and all of you for tuning in to another recorded author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore. We'll see you again next time.
Thanks so much.
Okay, in case I lose you all as I click buttons, you were terrific. Thank you again for visiting, and thank you for writing such wonderful books.
Well, thanks for doing this.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.